We're glad that Dick Dirksen is here with us today, bringing us the word. May it speak to each one of us in the way that we need to hear.
Good Sabbath. I am so honored to be able to worship with you this Sabbath. Thank you for that privilege. Brenda and I have not kept track of the churches where we've had the privilege of worshiping. We probably should have. That would have been fun. We've also thought that it would have been fun to take pictures of the bathrooms where we have been in our lives. As some of you know, we spent 10 years working with Maranatha Volunteers International, and you go to some amazing places, really, and good memories, so many good memories. But as I told some of the folks this morning, it is so nice not to be getting on an airplane tomorrow to fly to the other side of the world. For 10 years, we were gone from home 75 to 80% of the time, traveling somewhere from time zone to time zone to food to food. And we'd come home and say, wow, this is a neat spot. We ought to visit here more often. Please join me in the book of Colossians. You ready? Kids, you're going to love this. And if you take a minute, I'm going to give you a couple of stories that you will remember forever. And so what I'd like to do is go to the book of Colossians. Now it's page 1309 in my Bible. You know, this morning in one of the Sabbath school classes, we were talking about John 3:16. The most interesting experience for me one day, I had asked a secretary in my office in Mission Development at Florida Hospital, I had said, would you please get Colossians 2:20 and put it on a overhead for me, because I needed to use one that day. And so all I wrote was COL2:20. And then I left, figuring, okay, that'll be cared for. And it was. When I came back an hour later, everything was done, it was there ready, and so I was able to use it. But the next morning, one of the other secretaries, a Seventh-day Adventist gal who was just really wonderful, a deep spiritual leader, said, Dick, did you know that Margie came and talked to me as soon as you left yesterday? And I said, no, what about? That message you left her, COL2:20, she'd never seen anything like that. She had absolutely no idea what you were talking about. So I asked her, do you have a Bible? And she said, no. Where I go to church, they say only the preacher can have a Bible. Well, you're going to need one here. You're one of the assistants in the pastoral care area. Let me gift you one. So she pulled a Bible out and she said, so you know what COL means? No, I have no idea. Open to the table of contents. Wow. There's all those books in there? All those chapters? And it was just all discovery. All discovery. And when she said, when they took and put the Bible together, they decided it was hard to just have everything flow like in Hebrew and some other languages where it just, there isn't even punctuation. And so they punctuated it and they put chapters and they put verses so you can find anything. And she went, oh, that's so nice. And we gave her the Bible and she fell in love with reading it. I purposely then started giving her hard ones. E-H. What's EPH? And she would go to that table of contents and I'd watch through my door. She was digging around trying to find it. We had more fun together opening up brand new verses for her. Brand new insights into the love of God. Colossians 2. Verse starting 12. Now it's an odd place to start because I'm in the middle of a thought that Paul is sharing. He's talking about you and me. Having been buried with Christ in baptism and raised with him through your faith in the power of God who raised Jesus from the dead. When you were dead in your sins and in the uncircumcision of your sinful nature, God made you alive with Christ. I love that message. But the thing that's scary about it is it describes the first thing that has to happen for me to be able to experience the fullness of Jesus in my life. You know what that is? I have to die. One day in Zambia, I was sitting in a tent beside a church we were building. The tent was just really kind of a little bit of covering. And there was a large black African man sitting next to me. And he had a suit on, and I looked over, and I said, hi, my name's Dick Dirksen, and I don't have a suit on, and I'm sorry. And he said, oh, that's no problem. My name's Life Mutaka. Life, I said. Why do they call you Life? Because I was dead when I was born. And I said, all right, you need to tell me about this. He said, really, when I was born, my mother and father and other people tell me, they couldn't get me to breathe. And the doctor picked me up and bumped me up and down and walloped me on the rear and did everything they could to get me to breathe, and I wouldn't breathe. I wouldn't breathe. And so the doctor looked at my mother and said, I'm very sorry, this baby is stillborn. He was born dead. Just then, a midwife who lived in the same village burst through the doors and said, did I hear you say that that baby's dead? I'm really sorry. The baby's dead. And she said, that's not possible. God has told me this baby has a job in life. Now let me have him. And she reached over and grabbed me, said life, with one hand, grabbed my heels, and started bouncing me up and down. And she did it so long till I finally screamed. And everybody in the room went, he's alive! And my mother looked at the midwife and said, what shall I name him? Life. For he was born dead, and he will be alive for Jesus. And she left. And I looked at life, and I said, that has to be one of the funniest, forgive me, stories I've ever heard about a birthday. He laughed, and he said, I'll give you another one. You want to hear about my baptism? I said, I'd love to hear about your baptism. He said, as I got a little older, my parents sent me to a small Seventh-day Adventist school on the edge of the Zambezi River in our country. And it was a small school, but that's where I lived. That's where I grew up. That's where I learned about God. And one day a pastor came to do what they called a week of prayer. And all during the week he talked about baptism and he described it. He says, this is where you die so Jesus can live in you. And on Friday evening he came to my room and he said, life, I've heard about your story. You need to be baptized. Would you be baptized tomorrow? Tomorrow you can die so that Jesus can live. Life said, I didn't understand what he was talking about. I didn't understand it at all. But I said yes. And so that night, I wrote some notes in my room. I wrote a little letter to my best friend saying how much I enjoyed him and how much fun he had been and that he could have my Bible. And I wrote another letter to somebody else who really liked the blanket that was on my bed and said, you can have my blanket. And I wrote a letter home to my parents saying, I am going to be baptized tomorrow, and the pastor tells me that I will die. But it's okay, because Jesus said he will live in me. I don't know what that means, but I know I'm going to be gone, and I want you to know that I really loved you. On Sabbath morning, after church, there was a baptism in the Zambezi River, just up river from the hippos. Pastor walked out into the sandy river, little area there that wasn't too deep, and life was first. And life walked into the water knowing this was over. His life was coming to an end. The pastor put his handkerchief on life's face, lifted his hands, and said the prayer about Father, Son, and Spirit taking care of life's body and soul, and then he pushed me under the water, and I died. At least I thought I would. And then all of a sudden, he pulled me back up out of the water again, and there was water pouring out of my hair, out of my eyes, out of all of my body, and everybody on the shore was going, yay, woo, woo, woo. And I realized, I didn't die. Life, the man who died twice, once when he was born and once when he was reborn. According to Colossians chapter 2, and you can read it, there's several different ways God says it there through Paul, you die so God can live in you his life. And when you talk to life, there are big tears flowing down his cheeks. This is the man who has spent 28 years as the Associate Secretary of Education for the entire country of Zambia. And then he retired. He said, yeah, it was time to die again. So I retired. I told everybody I was leaving. They said, what are you going to do now? You're still young. He said, I'm going to go work for my church. And ever since then, he has been the director of education for the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Zambia, which, by the way, has one of our largest universities in the world, over 6,700 students in Life's University. Can you believe that? God needed this man. And Life looks at me and he says, Dick, wherever you get a chance to talk about baptism, remind people that you have to die so Jesus can live in you. And I said, Life, what does that mean? Dick, it's really simple. You got to give up being you, being proud, wanting everybody to notice you. You've got to give up when people slight you or ignore you or say weird things about you. You just ignore all of that because Jesus is inside of you as your life power. And those things don't bother him at all. So why should they bother you? Okay, I want to go to chapter 3. Chapter 3 is one of my favorite chapters in the entire scripture. Since then, whenever Paul starts this, I've got to go back and read the chapter before and the verses before, because when they divided all of these, I don't think they always put the numbers in the right places, and they sure missed this one. Because when a whole new book, a whole new chapter says, since then, that means I've got to read the chapter before. So I just did that for you. The entire chapter before, all it really says is, Jesus wants to live in you, but first you've got to make room by letting yourself go. Since then, and here's the great story from life's baptism, since you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. I love that picture. Isn't that amazing? I'm dead. Well, but Jesus Christ lives in me, the hope of glory. And you can read that again and again and again in Paul's writings. He's very clear. You've got to die before Jesus can have room to live in you. And that's all he wants. This morning in one of the Sabbath school classes, I heard that it's really easy to keep the commandments. I mean, they're so simple. The first one is the stumbling block. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. We all want to put ourselves first before God. I'm not going to kill anybody today. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to commit adultery. That's true. But first one, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Jesus used to say, don't let anything come between us, okay? So easy to let stuff, and especially our own pride, come between us. But here's the solution. Here's how to follow the commandments. Here's how to live life's life. Here's how to let Jesus Christ live his life in you. Let me read it again. I'm in New International. Whatever version you're in says the same thing. And by the way, if you're studying, please get 3 or 4 versions out there together and compare them. All of them are translations from manuscripts that had been copied at least 5 or 6 times. All of them are their best attempt to make it make sense. Take BibleGateway.com. You can actually click on a little button, and you can have up to 5 translations right there side by side. In this case, use Phillips. Oh, it's a gorgeous way to look at Scripture. Use the Message by Eugene Peterson. Use King James or New King James. Has a little more modern language. Use New International. And use John Wycliffe's Bible. It's fascinating. They all say the same thing right here. Since you have been raised with Christ. I can't think of anything more exciting. And when life was telling me about his baptism, he was crying. And he said, Dick, when I came up out of the water, I was crying tears. The water was running down, and it was like hippo water, but it was really my own saltwater tears. I'm alive because Jesus Christ is in me. How do you keep it there? 2 simple things. Number one, set your heart on things above where Christ is seated at the throne of God. Number 2, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. That's all it is. You know what the word set means? I love the way Paul, who was a tent maker, uses artisan words, uses the simple words about how to do things. The word set here is when you set a tent peg and get ready to hit it with a mallet, you better not move the peg or you're going to hit your hand. It's kind of foolish. But if you're good at it, you have to set it firmly. When you're a woodworker and you're going to make a dresser, you take 2 pieces of wood, you put whatever kinds of joint you want on it, and then before you put the glue, you make sure that they are set perfectly. Then you pull one off and put a little bit of glue and put them back together and bind it all down. It's set. It's not going to move. If you're a cobbler and you're making shoes, how do you make the heel stay? You set the leathers together and you nail them hard. Every tool I know demands that you set before you use it. If I'm using a pair of pliers, I set it on wherever I'm doing it before I twist. This is what God is saying we need to do with Jesus. Set, and what's the first thing? Set your heart. It's interesting that God starts with our emotions. If your emotion is filled with hatred towards somebody else, you can't set it on God. It's already set on your hatred for somebody else. If your emotions are thinking that this or that or these or those or whoever is in the way, that other person has come between you and God, and you cannot get a good set. Set your heart on Jesus Christ, who is up there seated at the right hand of God. Ellen White is so clear. We ought to spend a couple hours every day thinking about the cross and all that happened there. In my work with Maranatha, I have collected crosses from all over the world. It is so interesting to see the way different people make crosses so that they can think about Jesus on the cross. When I walk into my study and I've got this wall that's covered with bizarre, wonderful ways in which people love to set their mind on Jesus. One time, I was associate pastor of a church in Glendale, Arizona. We built a brand new church that year. And when we were talking about building the youth room, the church board said, well, ask the kids what they want. So the kids came back with their list. We want a cross on the wall, a cross that looks like 100 men have been killed on it. And the church board argued about it for several months. I don't know that we want a cross in the church. No, maybe it's okay. Finally, an old man in the church said, if the kids want a cross, it seems to me that's what we ought to put there. Dirksen, get them a cross. It looks like 100 people have been killed on it. So I drove to Wickenburg, Arizona, where I was also responsible for a church. You know how that is. We can't just have one. We've got to have more than one to spread those skills out. I'd made friends with a guy on the side of the hill near Wickenburg, a professional cigar store Indian carver. So I went to Ralph Gallagher, and I said, Ralph, you're a Sioux Indian. Do you know anything about God? I know it's the Great Spirit, so I want to get you something new. You sober today? I'm sober. Okay, here it is. And I gave him the chapter from Desire of Ages called Calvary. And I gave him four other sheets of paper, the story of Calvary from each of the gospel writers. I figured that was a little overkill for Ralph. But I left those and I said, Ralph, I want a cross that looks like Jesus was crucified on it. I want it 12 feet tall and 6 feet wide. He said, all right, get out of here. You're in my way. That's Ralph. Then one day, the clerk at the church received a phone call. Hey, this is Ralph. Tell Dirksen to come and get this cross out of my driveway. It's piking trouble. She called me and said, some weird man called today. And I said, okay, I got to borrow a truck. I borrowed a pickup and went to Wickenburg, and there was a 12-foot cross. He had driven to Payson, Arizona, cut down a pine tree, carved it, chopped it with his chainsaws, brought it home, carved it down with chainsaws so it looked like it was really awful. And then he had taken a big chisel and he had chiseled it. And then he had taken a small chisel and chiseled it. And then he had put nails in it. And then he had burned it. And then he had put varnish on it. And then he burned it again. And then he finally gave it to me. And it looked like a bunch of people had been crucified on it. And when we finally got it loaded in the truck, he handed me one more thing.
Well, I thought you might want this too.
You know that verse in John? Dot, dot, dot. It's a big plaque made out of that same tree. Dot, dot, dot. And follow me. Remember the verse? Take up your cross and follow me. And Ralph had read. He understood. I looked up at him when I opened it. I said, Ralph.
I know. It's heavy stuff you gave me, Dirksen.
Ralph, are you a follower?
I don't know. I think so.
Take up your cross. Set your heart on Jesus Christ on the right hand of God. Set your mind, your emotions, and your intellect. Put that up there too. For you have died, but your life is... The word in New International is hidden. I'm not sure what it is in the others right now. The word means, for your life is guarded in the heart of God. I love that picture. When you're in your car at night, your heart is guarded in the heart of God. Isn't that just wonderful? Okay, the rest of the chapter. I want to take you there. Verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. And then there's a list. These are things that just go away because they're not important anymore. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, greed, which is idolatry, by the way. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. And you don't used to do this, but you got to change because you got to get rid of all these things like anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Don't lie to each other anymore. And how does that happen? Because I wake up in the morning and say, okay, no more filthy language today. The next verse, 10. You have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator, Jesus Christ. You see what's happening? I die so he can live in me. And nevertheless, I live, but not I. Jesus Christ lives in me, the hope of glory. And I can be sure of that if every day, hundreds of times, I say, set my mind on Jesus. Set my heart on Jesus. Can I do this and have my mind set on Jesus? Yeah, sometimes no. And so I go do something else. Okay, here's the good part. Come with me. Therefore, verse 12. Underline this one. Put red stars around it. Therefore, as God's chosen people, and the word is really singular, as God's chosen person, male, female, holy, set apart by God, dearly loved, take the clothes he has given you and put them on. And here's the list of what God's new clothes look like. It's a description of the members, those who come here today to the Sutherland Seventh-day Adventist Church. Compassion. Isn't it interesting that the stuff you take off is hurting other people and the clothes God gives you? Compassion. You feel the softness already? Just the way you say the word, compassion. What does compassion mean? Everything God is, he gives you through me. Can I do that again? Compassion means everything God is, he gives you through me. In compassion, kindness, gentleness, humility, and patience. Oh, every one of those is a way of living that makes others feel valuable. Now, two things I want to show you. The first is a funny little deal. It's a flat piece of plastic, but when you pull it out, you can buy these at REI, you can buy them at Walmart, or you can buy them online. So far, how many is it? 12,000 have gone to Puerto Rico where people have no electricity. This is a solar-powered lantern. It's just so awesome. And there is a little bit of light, and there is a lot of light. And if I want to keep the mosquitoes away, I guess, there's light to make them think there's light. Hello, stop, go, stop. But it's one of my favorite little deals. There are thousands of these now hanging in homes all around Puerto Rico where they got more than enough sun, but they don't have enough light because they have no power. The people who make these are Christians whose only determination in life is to help people find the light of the world. Brenda? I want you to come join me for a minute. We have enough time to run through an experience that Brenda and I have gotten into the last few months about compassion. And I'd tell you the story normally, but instead I'm just going to ask Brenda to tell the story, and we're going to show you some pictures to go along with it, if we can pull this all off at once. Go ahead.
Thank you. The solar puff that he just showed you is such an inspiration. You can Google it and get on their website and participate. After the earthquake in Nepal, thousands of those solar puffs were delivered to people who had no power and were feeling so desperate, and it gave them hope. The project I am feeling so privileged to share about is called Impact Hope. And as the pictures start coming, I'm going to talk about what it is, just so you're aware of it. And if you know someone who wants to get involved, it's just quite inspiring to Dick and me. Some dear friends of ours in the Portland area are Hans and Mindy Tigeson. Mindy's mother, Arna Waterhouse, and her dad, who now has passed away, Gary Waterhouse, are good friends of mine from Minnesota, where I grew up. And Mindy's dad, Gary Waterhouse, was in the same class at Maplewood Academy, and so we had that tie. And then to see how God has moved on Mindy's and Hans's hearts to share across the world just thrills me. Hans and Mindy Tigeson, she wrote up the words to tell because usually they're the ones who share this. But she asked me, oh, you go with Dixon, can you share about Impact Hope? Hans and Mindy Tigerson heard about the Gihimbi refugee camp in Rwanda from an organization in Portland that tries to find some of the smartest kids in different African countries and then send them to university, hoping to produce the next generation of African leaders. So they were working with a handful of students from the Congolese refugee camps in Rwanda because they heard there were some really smart kids in the refugee camps. They went on to ask them, how come the smartest kids in Rwanda are coming out of Congolese refugee camps and they are all Seventh-day Adventists? Some kids from the camp were literally scoring the top grade in the Rwandan college entrance exam for the entire country. They definitely were wondering, really, why are they all Seventh-day Adventist? And are we as a church helping them? Why are all of them in refugee camps? Now, this is today. This is not 40 years ago. This is today. And this little organization, Impact Hope, just started less than 2 years ago. After some time, Hans and Mindy found the answers to their questions. I'm sure most of you know about the genocide that happened in Rwanda in 1994. 100 days of bloodshed. Over 800,000 people were killed. Toward the end of the 100 days, the people who had done all the killing were becoming afraid that their actions might get them killed or imprisoned. So as the general of the Rwandan Patriot Front marched into Rwanda, the perpetrators marched out of Rwanda and into countries like Burundi, Tanzania, and Zaire, now known as the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Unfortunately for those in the Congo, there were many of the people from the same Tutsi tribe who were being persecuted in Rwanda. Same tribe. Because years back when Belgium put dividing lines in, it had been one country, Rwanda and Burundi. Same tribe. So genocide began all over again in the Congo, and it hasn't stopped to this day. The area of the Congo where fighting and killing is the worst happens to be primarily Seventh-day Adventist, our brothers and sisters. These Congolese people had been converted to Adventism in the early 1900s by pioneer Adventist missionaries. Fast forward 20 years from 1994, and you now have five Congolese refugee camps in Rwanda with nearly 80,000 people, and almost all of them are Seventh-day Adventists. But over 23 years in a refugee camp, and they are still holding to the truths of the Seventh-day Sabbath and have incredible faith. The people in these camps are packed into incredibly tight quarters with no electricity. Oh, I wish they could all have solar puffs. They do have sunshine. They have no way to light their homes. Power lines actually go over the camps. Their roof is a tarp, which leaks. They have no running water, have open sewage, and live on 24 cents a day from the United Nations, which is enough for about one meal a day, corn powder, that they make into a pasty porridge. Does our Adventist church know about these camps? And the Adventists, our brothers and sisters in these camps? Yes, but there is no funding. There are no programs to support them. Education in the camps goes only until the ninth grade, which you may think, oh, that's not too bad. A lot of our kids in the U.S. drop out of high school. Problem is, there are no jobs for a person with a ninth grade education. In 2009, the youngsters in these camps came together and decided that their situation wouldn't change without education. Remember, a lot of these young people were born there. This is all they know. They knew something had to be done. So a group of young Adventist kids came together and built a small room of sticks and mud. They called it the Hope School. They gathered up anyone in the camp who had any education. Come, teach us. Maybe someone could speak English or someone who had been to high school. They asked them to come and teach them high school classes. The students worked very hard and diligently, and if any student was able to get any education outside of the camp, they took notes and saved all of their materials so that their brothers and sisters in their camp could learn too. Unfortunately, the government of Rwanda closed their Hope School in 2015, saying that refugees can attend local Rwandan high schools. However, the camps are situated far from the schools, at least 16 kilometers round trip. So just logistically, it is a challenge. Not to mention the victimization that occurs on the roads coming and going. Also, when it rains, and yes, there is a raining season, uniforms get soaked with no way to dry them. Some of the most brilliant students in the entire country, but they are not able to get to school and get an education. Regardless of the circumstances and the seemingly hopeless situation, the students are faithful, as most of them are Adventist. We know God sees each of the kids in these camps and wants for them the same opportunities as for the rest of us, and for our children, and for our grandchildren. An opportunity to become educated and earn a living for their families, to have health and to have peace. So the Tigersons got a few others together and decided that something must be done for these young Adventist scholars in the camps and for their future. Their dream of seeing these children go to school became the fuel for starting Impact Hope. Impact Hope is a nonprofit that believes that everyone should have an equal opportunity for education. We have seen God's hand at work, and we believe that He wants this program to succeed. This makes us very excited to be part of the solution. In February of last year, Impact Hope is proud to become partners with ADRA Rwanda. ADRA Rwanda is highly recognized by the government for all the good they continue to do there for their people, and was able to take 234 young people out of the camps and place them into 4 Adventist boarding academies in Rwanda. $600 a year will send a refugee to school, only $600, which not only provides, as they say, science and salvation, but it provides a new mattress. It provides sheets. It provides a blanket of their own spoon and fork. Remember, these people fled a very terrible situation. They didn't have a lot of time to pack up what things they might own. Little hygiene kits, shampoo, soap, washcloth, and towel. Transportation to and from the refugee camp to academy campus. 4 different academies are thrilled to have these bright students in their school. They have increased their enrollment, and the students are eager to learn. This provides 2 sets of uniforms, insurance, and medical care, Adventist education, and all their other essentials. This price is incredible, and we are very thankful to God, because for only $50 a month, we can take a life from mere existence to true living. The kids say, "You have taken us to Europe." Not really. Plus, the newfound hope is not just with the students. Their entire families are rejoicing and have placed their hope of a brighter future on their young scholar. We are pleased to say that now, just 2 years into the program, we now have 411 refugee students out of the camps and into Adventist academies. We know that this is not of our own doing, but can clearly see that it is the hand of God at work. 1 John 5:14 says, "This is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us." These children have pled with God for an education and a chance to do something to have a life. Ellen White says in Testimonies for the Church, Volume 6, pages 278-279, "Men and women of God, persons of discernment and wisdom, the household of faith first, let boys and girls be thoroughly taught some useful trade or occupation. We are to educate the poor to become self-reliant. This will be true help, for it will not only make them self-sustaining, but will enable them to help others." Could Ellen White see in her visions this story unfolding? At one of the schools where there are 110 Impact Hope students, the kids at the school wrote a letter to Mindy and Hans. Mindy's the young woman in the middle there with some of the scholars. In their letter, they describe how they have a desire to make us, as their parents, proud of them, because they call Mindy and Hans and Mindy's mom, who is a widow, who goes with her, works with them. She's a retired RN. And Mindy's not working in nursing because this is her passion. And along with their three little children and Hans is a construction contractor, they have put everything into this project. They feel they have been shown a love that they don't understand. And the only way that they can express that love to others is by passing on this opportunity to someone else. So the students at the school are selling soda and biscuits from a, in quotes, canteen they started, along with cabbage and onions from their own garden, and liquid soap that they make at school. They're taking the funds that they raise from the entrepreneurial ventures, and they have supported an orphan boy themselves from their refugee camp to attend school with them. In fact, they didn't even tell us, Mindy and Hans, until the second quarter of school what they had done. But they want us, the Tigersons, to be proud of them, and we are. It just shows the nature of these great kids. As soon as they have an opportunity to help someone else, they will do that. The ripple effect goes on and on. In fact, we won't really ever know how many lives are changed because of this program. Only God knows. I was privileged to be at the Oregon Conference Women's Retreat last year, and the Oregon Conference Women's Ministry Director, Terry Grable, had learned about Impact Hope and had invited Mindy and Arna to come and share about this project. And Mindy and Hans and Arna decided that they should share. It's such a big project. And there's so many children. There are like 10,000 high school students in these five refugee camps because 80,000 Adventist Congolese refugees have been living in refugee camps in Rwanda for over 20 years. So some of these bright students who said, okay, we don't have our Hope School anymore. We are going to walk to the closest public school over 16 kilometers away. I believe that's round trip, but still, they had to leave before light and come home after dark. And the ADRA lady in Rwanda, who her sole job is to go to these different refugee camps and encourage the young people and interview potential students who meet the qualifications, because there's thousands who desire this. And when there's a sponsorship, here's the next student in this picture showing students they've gotten on the bus to go to school. But anyway, at last year's women's retreat, the focus was on 98 young women that this ADRA coordinator had discovered were going to school at this public school and were being victimized along the way. And she said, if you're women's at your women's retreat, you could focus on 98 young women that have been identified as walking to school day by day. That would be wonderful. And praise the Lord, the money was raised. Now, it didn't all happen at the retreat weekend, but the women took home their cards of students they want to sponsor, talk to their husbands, to their families, and before the ripple effect finished, all 98 of those young women were sponsored. Praise the Lord. So out on the table, there are picture cards of students who haven't been sponsored yet. They're young women, young men, and they're not young because some of them are 20 years old. They finished ninth grade, but maybe they were born there in the refugee camp and haven't had an opportunity. They want to go to school. So they're hoping and praying and are being chosen. So there, these cards, what it takes to send one refugee to boarding school, that spells out, divides up how the $600 is spent. Take that card if you wish, but there are limited ones. And then also, we believe that people with passion can change the world for the better. And so they were invited back last weekend to the Oregon Conference Women's Retreat to share again that the offering would go toward these young people. So it's a thrilling project. Thank you for letting me share. We talked to Dr. Scalfani, and he said, yes, please share about it and tell the church. Remember them in your prayers. And also Hans and Mindy, who leave in just 1 month with Arna, her mom, with the first group of people from the U.S. who are going over to teach technical skills to the young people, these refugee children who are in our academies. They said, do we have to go back to the refugee camps during Christmas vacation? That's their summer break, you know, because it's opposite seasons from us. And so there are waves of different people going over, starting the 1st of December, 2 weeks at a time to teach sewing. So the projects right now and last weekend were to buy the treadle sewing machines. They need 160, and almost all of them have already, the money's been raised, to teach tailoring, sewing, gardening, electrical, plumbing, maintenance, practical things that can help them get a job. So praise the Lord. Thank you.
My wife's name is Brenda, but I think that's her middle name. Brenda's first name is Compassion. And if you've done a clinic with her somewhere in the world, you know what I'm talking about. And if you listen to her today, you know what I'm talking about. Everything about Brenda is focused entirely on finding ways to love others. You know why? Because she's dead. Is that fair? For you have died. No. But you are alive with Jesus Christ living in you. I know it's 12 minutes after 12. I have one other thing I want to share with you. And the reason I want to share it is because every time I think of dying and every time I think of Jesus Christ living in me, it takes me to the eyes of the people I've met around the world. It's pretty incredible and terrifying all at once. So I put together a small couple-minute video that's just pictures of faces. And the song that goes with it is a song about "Keep Your Eyes on Me." And it's a begging for Jesus Christ to keep looking at us, and at the same time for us to keep looking at him. The last picture was taken in Rivas, Nicaragua. The only baptistry we had was a small kiddie pool. It wasn't deep enough. They put that lady in. Others threw water on top of her, and she came out, looked at me, and said, "I'm not dead yet. I need to go in again." Dashed back in, splashed, as deep as she could get. And I took the picture as she came out. "I'm dead. He's alive." Lord, may our deaths be recorded in the compassion you live through us. Amen. Thanks for the privilege of being with you today. I'm honored. Mm-hmm.